Lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of the singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land.
Throws across his body, and he got it! We're going to wave McCann around third. Throw from the outfield is up the line, inside the park, home run! Deep, gone! Whoa! Up and he makes a catch up against the wall, and he's gonna watch it fly. Strike three call. He got him on strikes.
Welcome to The Voice of the Turtle, a podcast feature of West of Woodward, online at westofwoodward.com and also on Twitter at VOTTPodcast. I'm your host, Hook Slide, along with my co-host, Rob Rojacki, managing editor at blessyouboys.com and contributor for Beyond the Box Score. Rob, what is new and exciting in the world of baseball blogging?
Oh, I don't know. It feels like it's baseball season outside right now. I don't know how it is up in Michigan, but it was like 70 degrees today.
What?
Yeah, I was like ready to like go to the ballpark or something like that, and then, you know, it turns out it's still February.
No, it's been like in the high 20s, low 30s here for a long time.
Oh, that's gross.
Rain,
no.
Gross. Yeah, we haven't seen the sun in like 22 days. It's
ridiculous. I haven't worn a coat all week.
How did you get 70-degree weather in Washington?
I have no idea. It's supposed to snow tonight, but who knows?
Yeah, I thought I was seeing there was supposed to be some huge like winter storm coming in on the East Coast, so you guys are going to get like a foot of snow or something?
That would be nice, so that I wouldn't have to go to work tomorrow, but I don't think I'm going to get that lucky.
Okay. Well, not a lot has happened since we last recorded a couple of weeks ago, so we'll keep things short today. We will go through our stack of listener questions, and then Dan Dickerson, Tigers play-by-play announcer on WXYT, will be stopping in to talk with us about the 2017 season and how he foresees the whole thing playing out in the end. So we're looking forward to that. And so, without further ado, let's tackle the listener mailbag right after the break.
Swinging a fly ball to left field. This one's deep, going back, Gentry at the fence. It's gone! Wow. It's gone! A walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth for Jose Davis. Incredible! Around third, into the mops, and it's home.
And into the mob scene at home we go. We are picking apart Pecota, among many other things here. This is the part of the show where we take questions from our listeners. Get those questions to us on Twitter, at VOTTPodcast. Let's get right into it, Rob. Jeremy Troya wants to know, what toll, if any, does the World Baseball Classic put on players, team chemistry, etc.? Does the extended spring training caused by the World Baseball Classic bother the players?
I think that the extended spring training can bother players a little bit. I thought I remembered reading something, three years ago, whenever the World Baseball Classic happened last time, about how pitchers in particular are a little bit affected by it, that they need to kind of start their routines a little bit later or whatnot, or kind of manage themselves throughout spring training. Either, you know, whether they're pitching in it or not, I think that that has an effect. I think that the position players, for the most part, are probably fine. You know, if anything, they're a little bit more ready to start the season. I don't know how it affects them going down the stretch towards the end of the year, but it seems like, you know, the more swings they get, the better their timing gets. And, you know, if anything, having a longer spring training gives more reps for some of the minor league players, guys who wouldn't normally get into games. Maybe they pull starters out a little bit earlier to start on and give those minor leaguers some more reps. And so I don't know how big of an effect it has. I think that players are able to at least adjust a little bit and kind of start their routines around the same time every year as they would in a normal year. And if anything, the Tigers, I think, are going to try to manage some of the workloads of like Michael Fulmer and whatnot during spring training. And so it may not really affect them anyways, because they're being held back to a certain point or whatnot. As far as team chemistry goes, it might, especially if you have like new players that are coming in. But with this team that's been like together, like this is basically the same roster as last year. And so I don't think it's going to affect the Tigers one bit.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit before the show started about just who's going to be on that team. And I think we addressed that two weeks ago when we recorded. There's been a lot more Tigers added to the roster than I even realized. I'm just going through the list now. According to Wikipedia, anyway, we've got Warwick Saupold, which, you know, he's not like a big contributor to the big ball club, but you've got Ian Kinsler is on the team. Let's see here. Joe Jimenez is going to be playing. Frankie Rodriguez, K-Rod, is going to be playing. Bruce Rondon, Miguel Cabrera, and Victor Martinez. That seems like a mistake.
Half of Venezuela's roster.
That makes, I mean, really, Miggy and V-Mart? Really? oh God, wrap them in bubble wrap. Don't worried at
who
all?
Knows? I mean, not necessarily, because they might get hurt anyways in spring training. And right. So whether it's with us or, you know, in the World Baseball Classic, who really knows?
If it was going to happen, it was going to happen, right?
Pretty much.
All right, next question. Jay Polger says, 2017 is the last year of the window with JD gone, vets aging, and so forth. Why go so cheap in center field? Is that the owner's decision, or is Avila in over his head?
I just don't know that there are many options to fill the hole in center field. I mean, yeah, they could have gone out and spent $1 zillion on Dexter Fowler, but then you lose a first-round pick. It's tough to say how Fowler is exactly going to age out there. I know that he's kind of been up and down a little bit over his career. I know that a couple of his years, I think, in Houston weren't always the best, and then he kind of blossomed last year with the Cubs, or the last couple of years with the Cubs. But other than that, it was, you know, center field was kind of a wasteland. The entire free agent market was kind of a wasteland a little bit, and so people were clamoring for Austin Jackson or Desmond Jennings or Peter Borges or any of those guys. And the guys that are picking up in like David Lowe and Alex Presley aren't all that much worse than these guys. I mean, yeah, maybe you have a little bit better chance of someone like Desmond Jennings kind of regaining his form and being an average center fielder, but I still don't like the chances of that so much. And it's just tough. I mean, maybe you could swing a trade for someone. Like, I know that Kansas City's Jerod Dyson got moved this offseason, but they got a decent starting, you know, kind of decent young starter back in Nate Carnes, a guy who could either start for them or pitch out of the bullpen and almost be the next Wade Davis if things click. And so it's really kind of tough to fault Avila for the circumstances of this. I think a lot of people are still just upset about the Cameron Maben trade and the poor return that they got out of that. Had they, you know, gotten a slightly better prospect back from that or whatnot, I think that people wouldn't be so upset. It's just that, you know, you trade away Maben for what seems like nothing and a prospect in Victor Alcantara, but I don't know. I'm just not as upset about it as other people seem to be.
Well, I like the stuff that you were bringing out over at Bless You Boys in a comment there. You posted that back on Twitter too. Just kind of going down the list and saying, look, you know, when you start looking at limits like a 250 batting average and a positive defensive WAR, there's not a lot out there to begin with. I think you said there were like 13 that were even free agents, and two of like 13 that fit the criteria that were even free agents, and one of them got traded, and then you had Dexter Fowler left. The last guy standing, basically, what I'm getting to is Michael Bourne, who is still available.
He's still out there.
Yeah, I'm guessing he would have wanted probably too large of a contract, too long and too, you know, expensive a contract for the Tigers' tastes.
Yeah, probably. The fact that he hasn't signed with anyone yet, I think, is indicative of him having, you know, higher demands than what he did. I mean, he had a decent finish to last year. I think that he played well down the stretch with the Orioles, but no one's really bitten on that yet. And you have all these teams picking up other guys on minor league deals. It seems like teams are really only going for minor league deals at this point. And so we'll see if anything clicks during spring training. I imagine the Tigers are probably happy with what they have right now. I think the one other guy that you might have looked at is Ian Desmond, but he got a huge, huge contract with the Colorado Rockies, and I just don't necessarily see why the Tigers would have wanted to match that.
All right, next question from Jacob, whose last name I'm going to butcher now. Skoronek wants to know, is Mikey Matuk actually Matt Tuiasosopo wearing a mask? And I think he asked that question just to see how many really difficult to pronounce player names he could throw into one question.
I imagine that Matuk is, you know, at least slightly fast, whereas Tuiasosopo was pretty slow. But other than that, I don't know. Do they look alike? I have no idea what these guys actually look like.
I didn't see the resemblance, physically at least. I'm not sure if we're talking more about like a statistical, you know, whether from the batting side or...
I have no idea.
You know, just in the
I don't even remember what Tuiasosopo looked like, to be honest.
Tuiasosopo was a little bit heavier set, had that long hair. I mean, maybe it's more of a question of, hey, Matuk had that one really hot season, you know, starting out, just like Tuiasosopo came on in 2013 and just lit the world on fire for the first half. And, you know, we had a lot of fans that were saying, oh, man, this guy should be, you know, more regular playing time. And then, of course, he inevitably fell off the cliff and has not been seen since. So I don't know that Matuk is in danger of that, though. We talked about that last week, just the fact that he is a first-round draft pick. He has had very limited time. I think you start to see him round into shape and see what he's really all about as he gets more and more playing time with Detroit.
Yeah, just like I said a couple of years ago with Tuiasosopo, whenever he was here. When was he here? What year was that?
2013.
How do you know that? Did you look that up?
No, I just remember. I remember that being the year. That was the year we had sluggers left and right, and he was one of them. He was another slow-footed, heavier set guy who would just bomb the ball.
That's a good. Yeah, no, it was 2013 because that was the last time the Tigers were. They were in D.C. and I remember him playing here. I think it was 2013. Who knows? No, but like I said with Tuiasa Sobo, I think that Matuk was going to be somewhere in the middle of those two extremes that he had, which, you know, given his offensive numbers in either season, isn't really much of a stretch.
Right. All right, next question from our friend Chief Broom on Twitter. Everything else being equal, would you prefer a few mediocre years or full-on tanking after this year ends?
I don't know if I would want to, you know, a full-on tanking after this year, because you look at the guys that the Tigers lose. You know, they lose Francisco Rodriguez, and then you have the guys like Anibal Sanchez, Mark Lowe, and Mike Pelfrey. The only real guy of consequence they lose is J.D. Martinez. And yeah, that's a huge bat to lose, but he gave a lot of that value away with his poor defense last season. And then you have a guy like Kristen Stewart potentially stepping in and filling a lot of that value. I mean, maybe not defensively. He definitely doesn't have the arm that JD does. His range is also pretty suspect. Seems like he's just a left fielder and might end up pushing Justin Upton over to right. But if you can get, like, if he turns out to be the kind of prospect you think, or if, you know, Michael Gerber comes up and kind of fixes the swing issues that some scouts are labeling him with, if one of those guys pans out in right field, or if, you know, someone like Tyler Collins or Steven Moya, someone steps up to provide a little bit of value there. I mean, this is otherwise still the same team that's coming into this season that people are relatively optimistic about. I think people are a lot higher on this team than the projections are. And if they're able to perform and, you know, fill that hole in right field, what else are they losing?
Yet I'm not sure how or what is even meant in the question by saying a full-on tanking, if unless we're talking about, you know, the fire sale, basically trying to trade off Miguel Cabrera, trade off Justin Verlander. And I'm not sure that I don't know how movable some of those contracts even are. You know, I know those guys are good players, but they are getting on the wrong side of, you know, 32 and 33 and so forth. You talked about all the players that they're already losing coming off the books. That frees up some space. You know, I don't think there needs to be a fire sale per se at any point.
No, not really. I mean, I think that there's going to be a little bit of attrition all throughout to get the payroll back down to where the Illiches want it to be, whether it's Mike Illich or Chris Illich, who knows. But I think that the Tigers are going to be okay going forward. I mean, yeah, there's still going to be some aging. I think that once Victor Martinez's contract clears the books, you're going to see maybe even a little bit of improvement because the Tigers are going to be able to kind of do some more creative things with the DH position, whether that's moving Cabrera there or Nick Castellanos or Stewart or someone else. Who knows? I mean, you know, we're not really sure what happens. But even after 2018, they lose, I think, Kinsler and Martinez. So that's another $30 million. Off the books, and they're going to be able to go out and potentially even get a free agent if they need to kind of supplement the roster that way. With the young pitching that they have, I think that's really the key, that if you get Zimmerman to bounce back a little bit and that young pitching continues to develop, they're going to be right in the thick of things.
Yeah, and I know we've talked about this before and said this before, but I really feel like, look, people get really, you know, they're hard on Al Avila right now, you know, for what he has done or hasn't done, you know, since taking over mid-2015. But I don't think Al Avila gets to do what he wants to do until the 2018 season is over. And all of those contracts come off the books, Sanchez, Martinez, you know, all the ones that you mentioned, Pelfrey and so on and so forth. Then you have much more, I think, of a kind of a blank slate that he can fill in the way he wants to do it. I think that's when you really begin to see what is Al Avila made of. Can he do this job? But you have to wait, I think, until 2019 to see that.
And you're going to be able to see them fill a couple of these holes with, you know, internal guys. That's really kind of been the big knock on the Tigers is their farm system. But now the fact that they haven't traded a prospect in, you know, going on almost 2 years now that they haven't traded a prospect, you're starting to see guys that could come up and contribute. I think a lot of them are bullpen guys and Joe Jimenez and some of the other guys down there. Adam Ravenel is another one that people are, or at least people within the organization seem to be high on. And so if you fill some of those holes, especially those bullpen roles where you don't have to spend $6, $7, $8 million on a reliever, then that frees up money to go elsewhere. You can go out and get maybe the one free agent you need to kind of supplement the roster on the lineup.
Let me go down a rabbit trail just for a second here as we're talking about, you know, guys coming up from the minors that could potentially fill spots. You know, you mentioned Kristen Stewart, Michael Gerber, some of these others. But I think it was Chris McCoskey that wrote the other day about Steven Moya and the fact that he's out of options. And the Tigers kind of need to, you know, make a move one way or the other in terms of, you know, after spring training, they gotta try to get him through waivers, or they gotta try and trade him. What do you think is the smart move there with Steven Moya? I'm scratching my head, going, I'm not sure what I would do with him.
It's tough to say. It's really tough to say what exactly they would do, because you can, I mean, let's kind of look at the bench the way it is. You have four spots on the bench. One of them is going to be taken up by Alex Avila. Another one is, in, you know, 99.9% likely to be taken up by Andrew Romine. Then you have two more spots left. I imagine that one of those is probably going to go to Dixon Machado, because the Tigers have, you know, for years, whether it's Brad Ausmus or Jim Leland, whether it's Dave Dombrowski or Al Avila, they've always wanted to have kind of those two utility infielders on the roster. And so Machado seems like kind of the natural to take that place. So then you basically have to choose between Tyler Collins or Steven Moya. Which one of them is going to be on the roster? Collins can play a little bit of center field, but I think is much more likely to make it through waivers. I don't think there's any chance that Steven Moya makes it through waivers. You have all these teams, like the Brewers are one that have just kind of been claiming people left and right, taking shots on guys. And you know, Moya's a guy with 80 grade raw power. I don't think that there's any way that one of those bottom feeder teams, a team that has no chance in contention this season, there's no way they're going to pass up that kind of talent and see if they can, you know, turn him into potentially an all-star. Because if Moya's hit tool clicks and he's able to, you know, hit 240 with a semi-respectable walk rate, if he hits, you know, 240 with a 280 on base percentage, he could hit upwards of 30 home runs and still be a valuable player.
Well, you brought out all of the main sticking points, you know, the kind of the hard parameters here, the fact that he's probably not going to make it through waivers. So that would be a bad idea to let him clear that and hope he goes back to the minors. On the other hand, as McCoskey pointed out, the corner outfield positions in Justin Upton and JD Martinez are fixed. They're not going anywhere. So Moya's not going to, you know, land a spot. He's probably not going to go play center field because he's already kind of a defensive liability, even in the corner positions as it is. And I just kind of thought, well, you could DH with the guy. I mean, what else do you do with the guy that's got the 80 grade raw power except put him in the DH spot? You know, but you've got Victor Martinez there. So I don't really know. I hope that they would at least make an attempt to trade him, you know, if they're going to – don't let him just go through waivers. In other words, don't get nothing for him. Get something out of him.
Yeah, and the one thing that the Tigers might be able to prey on with that is, like, you know, looking at a team that's a little bit further down that might be interested in Moya, you know, someone that's a little bit further down the waiver wire, they may be willing to part with some sort of prospect so that they can kind of jump the line, so to speak. Because I think that, like we said, I don't think he's going to make it through waivers. And if you get a team that's a little bit further down, they may be like, all right, you know, we don't have much of a chance of claiming him, so we'll give up a prospect for him.
All right, next question here from Drew Pajic wants to know, what's the team's injury threshold? That is, what's the amount or severity of injuries they could allow for and still make the playoffs?
Well, looking at the roster from last year, I mean, you had, what, four guys suffer, or I guess five guys suffer major injuries last year. And J.D. Martinez, Cameron Maben, Nick Castellanos, Jordan Zimmermann, and Daniel Norris was out for a little bit. And so with those five guys, I mean, I think you've got to take the number down to like three or four. And I don't think either of them can be Justin Verlander or Miguel Cabrera. I think that those two guys are just too valuable with what they provide. So if you lose, you know, three guys for kind of that month, month and a half that all of the guys I mentioned were out for last year, I think the Tigers could be okay. But anything beyond that, they're really, really going to struggle.
Yeah, that's the trouble with that stars and scrubs model that we always talk about, is you can go ahead and have some depth somewhere. I think their starting rotation is probably okay. You know, they do have some depth there. We've talked about kind of a glut of pitchers there with Matt Boyd and Daniel Norris, Michael Fulmer, and then the, you know, Mike Pelfrey, Anibal Sanchez. You've got some guys there. The bullpen seems like it's got some depth. But if you lose a guy like, you know, Ian Kinsler, you don't have someone that can provide that much war, you know, to back that up. Miguel Cabrera is another one, like you mentioned. You lose some of these guys, and do you remember what it was, 2015, when Miguel Cabrera was gone for like 6 weeks? What was the guy's name that even replaced him? They went and picked him up from like the Phillies or something.
They got, what was his name, Mark Krause for a little
Krause.
Bit.
Mark Krause, yes, well
but he
done.
played like 10 games, I thought it was. He hit a homer in the first game, and everyone was like, oh, you know, this is going to be great. And then he was terrible.
So that's the team's injury threshold. It's like you've got some wiggle room as long as it's not one of these key, you know, where you're getting all your values from the stars, because then they just don't have the backup for that.
That was kind of one of the questions I had answered in a post on the site this week, is, you know, who is the one guy the Tigers can't afford to lose? And I think it's Cabrera. I know that Kinsler and probably Verlander are going to have higher WAR totals this year, but I think that Verlander, I mean, you have other guys in the rotations that can kind of fake their way to success for a little while. I know Anibal Sanchez had a run, you know, a decent little run last year, and there was a point in 2015 where he looked like he was back for a point. So if you get the right kind of month out of him with Verlander out, I think the Tigers would be okay for the most part. Kinsler, the same thing. I mean, you have Dixon Machado there. He's going to provide value defensively. Maybe he can kind of, you know, fake his way to success for a little while hitting the ball as well. He gets on base a fair amount, or, you know, does well to run and whatnot. Who knows? But there's nobody at first base. Like, who do you put there?
Steven Moya? I don't know.
Yeah, there's literally like no name you can think of that you would put there. Other, you know, than someone like Moya who'd be learning on the fly, or Victor Martinez who might come up lame after two games there. And it's, you know, it's just a huge problem. So Miggy just can't go down this year.
Which is why he should not be playing in the World Baseball Classic. All right, last question from Bill Getchman wants to know, how much do you read into team projections, Pecota, et cetera? And we probably should have talked about this a little bit earlier, but the Pecota projections came out. They've got the Tigers finishing in third place with only 77 wins. Now, to be fair, last year they only had them pegged at 79. I think Pecota's always kind of on the low conservative side when it comes to win totals. But really, I mean, they've got Minnesota beating out Detroit for a second place position.
I don't really read too far into them sometimes. You know, I kind of like to take a look at the individual projections and see why it is that the Tigers are projected so low. And in Pecota's case, it's because they're just down on the pitching staff. Justin Verlander is the only starter that Pecota projects to have an ERA up under 4, and he's at like 3.95 or something like that. as far as the lineup goes, the lineup's projected to be pretty, you know, fairly productive with Cabrera doing well. I think he's like almost projected to, you know, be in the triple crown hunt. I know that he's like projected for the highest number of RBIs, the highest batting average, and he's like third in home runs in the American League. You know, Kinsler's projected to do well, and Upton, and they're still a little bit down on JD Martinez and Castellanos, and so I think those are two guys that can exceed their expectations and projections. But yeah, with the way that the projections work, as far as kind of aggregating a, you know, it's like a, they aggregate a high number of projections and then kind of take the average of all those. And I think that you're going to get kind of like a, basically a bell curve with that. And so a lot of the guys just kind of fall back to the middle, when I think there's a good chance that a lot of them exceed those expectations, especially, you know, some of the younger pitchers and the younger relievers.
Yeah, it's one of those things about Pecota, and I think a lot of other projection systems, whether Zips does it too, but you know, I kind of explained that you always start with starting pitching. That's kind of the crux of the thing. That's why Cleveland has always finished, you know, in first place in the projections for years and years, even when they didn't in real life. And of course, they're back on top again, you know, for this year's projections to win 91 games. But you even look at like last year's projections, they had the Chicago White Sox finishing in second place. And you go, well, of course, you had Chris Sale, you had Jose Quintana, you know, Rodon, you had some pretty decent pitchers. When I looked at the run totals, the projected runs scored and runs allowed from last year to this year for the Tigers, it was interesting to me that they had the runs scored going up considerably. I think, you know, that's probably accurate, but they had the runs allowed just skyrocketing. They added like 50 or 60 runs, and I was like, either that's because, like you said, they don't trust the pitching, which, fair enough, it's kind of a lot of question marks. You don't know if you're going to get Daniel Norris or Mike Pelfrey as a regular starter. But the other thing I noticed was the defense. I mean, of course, they've got terrible defense, but they've got the, like, as far as like James McCann, they've got him getting worse, you know, in terms of framing runs and that kind
of thing. And I'm interested by that, because a lot of people, you mentioned that McCann had gotten better. The numbers show that McCann got a lot better at framing from last year compared to what he did in 2015. And you wonder how well that's going to stick. And that's just kind of a question I have on pitch framing. Like, if guys show a big jump, especially the jump that McCann made, I mean, I think he was like almost a full win better last year compared to what he was in 2015. Does that stick? Is that sustainable? Does he regress back to that? And so is that kind of a quirk of the projections, because they're taking several years of data to form these projections? Does that not show up in the projection, but will be something that he's going to exceed his expectations because he has made this noticeable improvement in his pitch framing and his defense?
Well, the lesson to be learned there, I guess, is that when you look at the fact that Pecota has the Kansas City Royals again finishing in last place, and I think it was Royals Review pointed out that Pecota has never had Kansas City winning, ever. and yet we saw them in the World Series 2 years in a row. And I said, well, that's because they never had good starting pitching, but they won games with their bullpen, and they won games with things like, you know, speed on the bases and good base running. Those are the places where you can win games beyond what the computers can say. So look, the Tigers have got to get better at, you know, the defensive side of things. They've got to get better at smarter base running, taking the extra base more often, that kind of thing. If they can do that, I think they can overcome a lot of the other, you know, issues that the computers might spot.
Yeah, I think that Pecota is also a little bit bearish on young players, in particular young pitchers. I mean, you see Michael Fulmer, he's projected for like a ERA of like 4.15,
wow,
or something like that. And I bet that he's going to top that. I don't think he's going to repeat what he did last year, but I think that he can be in the mid-threes with that. Maybe he regresses a little bit more than that, but I struggle to see him having an ERA above 4. You know, Daniel Nora is kind of the same thing. I think he took a major step forward down the stretch last year, and I think that we're going to see a pretty good year out of him. It'll be interesting to see how these guys hold up over the course of the season. Like we talked about before, there's a little bit of a longer spring training. These guys are, again, they're coming off of big innings jumps from the year before, Fulmer in particular, and we'll see how they kind of do with that. Do they start to tire down the stretch a little bit? Do they, you know, does the organization hold them back in spring training and then just kind of delay how effective they are at the start of the year? That's going to be one of the interesting storylines to follow this year.
Yeah, I think much like last year, the Tigers are kind of in the situation where it's a really big flip of the coin. If everything clicks, if Verlander is as good as last year, if Fulmer is as good as last year, if Zimmerman pops back, if Upton, you know, puts on a huge offensive display, if JD Martinez stays healthy and, you know, Miguel Cabrera does come into Triple Crown territory, it's a no-brainer. This team's going to win 93, 94 games and take the division. But how likely is it that all of those things click at once and you don't have issues? Let's not forget about Nick Castellanos. I think the guy had a great breakout season last year. He was, you know, interrupted with the broken hand. But if he gets a full season next year, I think you see him take huge strides forward.
Uh-huh.
I'm not ready to predict that he'll make the All-Star team yet, but he's getting there. So
now, for third base is way too loaded in the American League. I mean, he's never going to make an All-Star team because you've got, what, Evan Longoria, you've got Josh Donaldson, you've got Manny Machado. There's just too much in front of him.
Even as a backup, though? I mean, come on.
I mean, maybe he could as a backup, but I still think it's going to take a little bit. No. What do you think about Upton in the two spot in the lineup that, what was it, Anthony Fenech reported that?
Oh, yeah, because that's where he started last year, wasn't it? Justin Upton always batted second, then he dropped to, like, fifth, and then, I don't remember, seventh, and then back to two. You know, I don't think it's a good spot for him just because the strikeout totals they're always going to be high. I know they were super inflated last year, but career-wise, he's always had, you know, 30% plus, I think, or 28,
yeah,
somewhere in there.
High 20s.
You don't want a guy who does that batting in the two spot. You want a guy that gets on base, I think. I don't know about...
I mean, we'll see. I mean, he's always been good at getting on base, even despite the strikeouts. A lot of people pointed out how he struggled last year in the two spot, but I was looking back at his career numbers, and they're like in line with what he's done in other spots in the lineup. He's done it before, and so I don't think it's a huge deal for him. I think that he was just kind of like that new transitioning to the new city and whatnot, because, you know, after the first 6 weeks last year, he was basically the same guy. It was all distributed towards the end, but he was basically the same guy after the first 6 weeks. And so I think it was just kind of getting used to the American League and the new city and all that. I think we're going to see a pretty good year out of him.
I guarantee if he goes into the two spot to start the season and he struggles like he did last year to start, you will hear just howls from the fan base about getting him the hell out of there, you know, just like it was last year. But I don't know who you do put there except for like Alex Avila when he plays, because the guy gets on base all the damn time.
See, here's my thought. I would put Victor Martinez there.
What? Why?
Yeah. Because with Martinez in the four spot, I mean, you have guys like JD Martinez and Justin Upton following him, and Victor kind of clogs the bases a little bit. But putting him in the two spot, he has a low strikeout rate. He gets on base. He's a good hitter. With Kinsler on base in front of him, does it change how teams shift on V-Mart at all? As opposed to like having Miggy on first base. I mean, they're going to shift him because Miggy's not much of a threat to go from first to third or to steal a base or anything. I think that Kinsler kind of makes teams think twice about that. And if anything else, like if V-Mart slows down Miggy on the bases, maybe that stops Miggy from running into an out or getting hurt or something like that. And so it's almost like pumping the brakes on him is a good thing.
That's an interesting thought, because like I said, he clogs up the bases no matter where he is in the lineup. But if he's in number two spot and he's on base, Miguel Cabrera is going to have to hit home runs all day long, or you're never going to score Victor Martinez. And that
Or do you even see Martinez start to go the other way a little bit more in that spot? Like, does he use all fields a little bit more as opposed to trying to pull the ball in the number four spot where he maybe feels more of a need to hit for power? Does he change his approach at all? I think it would be very interesting. It's kind of an out-of-the-box idea. And someone suggested Avila that I was talking to earlier this week, and I said, you know, if you're going to pick a guy with a high on-base percentage that's slow as hell, might as well just make it V-Mark.
Alex Avila could beat him in a foot race handily, though. I mean, there's slow, and then there's Victor Martinez.
Yeah.
So, still. I don't know. The fact that we're talking about lineup construction, though, is a good sign, because that means we're really, really close to baseball actually coming back. So I'm glad.
And the fact that Ausmus is going back to Upton in the two spot, I think, is also a good sign.
Fair enough. All right, that's it for our questions. We'll take a short break and come back with our seventh inning convetch, and we'll be talking the Tigers season preview with Dan Dickerson. Stick around for that right after the break.
3 now. Here's the 2-2. Oh, boy. Curveball grabbed the outside corner. Victor not happy. Pitch that he felt went around the plate. You rarely see Victor complain. Brad Ausmus better get out there quickly. Oh, and Victor got tossed. Wow.
And welcome back from the break as we wrap up the show with our seventh inning kvetch. As you know, this is the part of the show where we sometimes have special guests, and has become somewhat of an annual tradition for us here on the podcast. We are joined on this show by, well, you know him as the man behind the microphone, the man with the golden voice, the Tigers play-by-play radio announcer Dan Dickerson joins us to talk about the 2017 season. Dan, thank you so much for coming on the show with us.
No, you're welcome. I always enjoy talking with you.
Before we get to the good stuff here, I had one question from a friend of the podcast and staff writer for BlessYouBoys.com. Brandon Day wants to know, what does Dan drink on the air to keep his voice so smooth?
lots of water, and my drink of choice is in the summer is iced coffee.
Iced coffee? No.
No. Whether that keeps my throat in good shape, I don't know. But knock on wood, other than this cold I have right now, my voice is usually held up over 162 games pretty well for 17 years now.
Success.
Yeah, that's right. As long as it's successful, it's got to be a good thing. But you're up late at night. I mean, these games go till 10:30. I hope you're drinking decaf.
Oh, no, I'm one of those weird people who can drink a regular caffeinated coffee and fall asleep 15 minutes later. You know, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't really want to know. But I know that I can, so okay. That's what I do.
Well, enough with the health issues. Let's talk some baseball, I guess. It was about this time last year, Dan, that you joined us on the program. We talked a little bit about the 2016 season and what we anticipated would happen. And I recall you saying that you felt like the Tigers team at that time was a good 90-92 win team. And then we had the reality kind of take place where they only, you know, racked up 88. They came very close to what you thought. Just kind of give us your thoughts on what happened between your prediction and the reality.
Yeah, and I think it was a reasonable prediction because you always assume good health. You don't predict bad health, and I do think Jordan Zimmermann, I'm not sure Jordan Zimmermann was healthy all year. If you remember April, everybody said, well, he pitched great in April. Well, he did, but he didn't strike out anybody, and his stuff was not the same as it was with the Nationals. I'm not sure he was healthy all year. I think that neck issue was bothering him throughout the years, but let's call it, you know, a month and a half of good starts from Jordan Zimmermann, but that was about it. If you told me that, I probably would have revised my idea downward. Although it did lead to, well, some of the performances did lead to Michael Fulmer at some point getting into the rotation. The other thing, I mean, I just think that injury, J.D. Martinez, Castellanos missing 2 months, those things added up. I really believe that. And then you're putting a lot on the young pitchers who, you know, did superbly. I mean, what were they combined? 37-20, Norris, Boyd, and Fulmer, you know, over the last 57 starts that they made. You know, the Tigers were 37-20. So, you know, there was a lot to like. But I would say, in terms of my prediction, I would look at the injuries as being a part of it. The other thing, I thought Aníbal Sanchez was a key. I thought he had a chance to bounce back, and obviously did not.
No.
And that wasn't a small thing either.
Well, I mean, go ahead. Sorry about that.
I was going to say, if you want to take a little bit of a side tangent there, you brought up Aníbal Sanchez and you know, the fact that he should have been a key contributor last year. What do you see as the prognosis for him going forward in 2017? Can he bounce back? Is he going to be given a chance to bounce back?
Great question. I think that's the question going into spring. The three big contracts, a total well, $30 million almost. Sanchez, Pelfrey, and Lowe combined to make almost $30 million this year, and obviously all of them fell out of favor for good reason last year, and I don't know. I mean, you can't – I don't picture a bullpen with all three being in the bullpen. Boyd outpitched Sanchez last year, and certainly at this point in his career has a higher upside. Sanchez is making $15 million. You'd probably – I mean, you would think he gets every chance to show that maybe he can return some value on that and that Boyd would start. I don't picture him starting out the bullpen. He's got to be a Toledo if Sanchez makes a rotation. But, again, are you going to pay him to hurt you? Which, let's face it, he has the last 2 years. It's been very tough. Or are you going to pay him to go away? And, they don't want to. I know that. But if Boyd's clearly the better choice, then you really feel like he's on the verge of, if not a breakthrough, of being a pretty consistent number five starter. It'll be a very interesting decision. I picture Sanchez in the rotation, Pelfrey maybe in the bullpen. I don't know how you figure out Mark Lowe's situation, because if the velocity isn't there, well, let's face it, relievers, they don't gear up their arms in spring training. They're not hitting mid-90s early on, or even usually till the very end. And if he gets knocked around, and you remember what happened last year, and you're thinking, okay, how do we evaluate whether Mark Lowe is going to be, a piece in this bullpen, owed $5 million, his career is pretty well tracked with the velocity of his fastball. And I know that he said he got guys out with a low 90s fastball last year, which was great, but, I mean, he needs that power fastball, let's face it, and we just didn't see it last year.
Now, Dan, you mentioned Pelfrey, Sanchez, and Lowe. Heading into the offseason, I think a lot of people were expecting the Tigers to trade one of them, or even someone like J.D. Martinez after Al Avila's comments early on. What do you think happened with that? Was Avila ever serious about trading anyone, especially Martinez or Kinsler or any of the other names that popped up in the rumors? And should they have? Or do you think that this was kind of the right course for them to take to kind of, maybe I think people are still kind of up in the air about the Cameron Maben trade, but just generally kind of reloading for this season. Do you think that was the right move?
I do. I'm glad they didn't make many moves. And I always go back to that press conference in October when Al said, he was asked directly, do you have a number to get down to? Al's a pretty transparent guy. If he had a number to get down to, he probably would have said so. If he didn't give the number exactly, I think he would have been very honest and said, yeah, we've got to cut a certain amount. I'm not going to give you that number, but yes, we do. His answer was no. I do not have a number to get down to. I've told the owner, Mr. Illich, that this is my plan going forward. Get younger, leaner, more athletic, and cheaper. Cutting payroll. I mean, you got $30 million, as we talked about, coming off the books of just three pitchers at the end of this year. That gets you to 170. I mean, this is probably a market that would be, in the owner's eyes, probably 150 is at the high end for a market like this, somewhere in that 150 to 160 range. They can get there pretty quickly. I thought they would, because it wasn't a number they had to get to, because it wasn't a fire sale, I thought they would listen, and I'll bet they did. But when you think of what Chicago got for Chris Sale, if I'm dealing Justin Verlander, I want guys who are in the major. I want Benintendi. Right. I want Bradley.
Right.
And Kopech. And clearly that was not going to be the deal. But, I mean, that's – so, okay, you find out the market's not going to support that. You can ask, see what it supports. I really thought Boston might be. But, they give up two guys who basically haven't played in the major leagues and a third. So to me, it just – and the last guy you would have traded to me is Ian Kinsler because, I mean, you guys know he's probably worth double what they're paying him right now. And you've got him for two more years at $23 million. And I think the only way they're going to trade him is if they figured they could get a huge haul in young prospects, and I don't think that deal is out there either.
And so the end result is that they end up kind of keeping the band together for 2017 going forward. We've seen some projections come out. USA Today released theirs. Pecota has theirs out. I think Zips did theirs. Even some independent bloggers. And I'm kind of seeing everyone saying basically the same thing. It's not... The projections this year aren't far off from what they were last year. Do you feel that that's accurate? Go ahead and give us your prediction for, 2017. Same roster, same number of wins.
Right. So I'm generally seeing low 80s. That's what you're seeing, I'm assuming, as well. I haven't seen the Pecota ones yet, but
right.
I'm assuming low 80s. That's where everybody seems to be.
Pecota's a little bit lower.
Even lower. Dave Schoenfeld, wrote a good piece the other day. I think he's really good. But it's good to read what the outside world thinks because you always want to guard against overvaluing your own guys. But he doesn't think that Nick Castellanos is a real plus everyday player yet. I think at 25 with the gains that he made last year and just a slight improvement at third base, he will be a plus at third base. The national narrative doesn't seem to change that it's an aging team, which it is really not, not with the young pitchers and guys who are 29 and younger and right center, left, short, third, catcher. So I still think there's a lot of talent on this team. I think people look at the rotation and they see Verlander, Fulmer, and a lot of question marks. That's fair. Zimmerman has to be healthy this year. He has to be that guy who averaged 32 starts a year with, what, a 3.20 ERA the last 4 years with Washington before the Tigers signed him. He has to be that guy. And I do worry about that a little bit with the neck issues that he had last year and into the offseason. I think North's going to take a huge step forward this year. And if those two click, Fulmer may regress a little, but I don't see why he has to regress a whole lot. He was pretty darn good. He showed how he knew how to pitch and knew how to use that changeup. And, you know, Justin might fall back a little bit. But, again, that's a pretty good one, too. So I look at this team. Al Avila said, hey, it's a little dangerous to think status quo, and that if everybody's healthy, we should be fine. He said that in October, and that's why he wanted to at least look at, you know, what offers might be out there. But that's what they're going to do. Hope for good health. Hope for Joey Menez, I think, to add to the bullpen. Wilson and Green are the primary set of guys. They did not finish the season well. I think Wilson had an elbow problem, talking about Justin. Shane Green, I think, I don't know whether it's just getting used to relieving or what it was. I mean, those are two really good arms for a couple of months, were very good in the setup role. Bruce Rondon made big improvements last year. I still think he has to prove to the Tigers he can handle the pressure because they didn't use him in pressure situations a whole lot late in the year to protect leads. But he did make big improvements if you look at strikeouts and walks. There's a lot of talent on this team. Again, I'm looking at all the same national predictions you are, and I'm thinking, okay, nobody thinks this team can even win 85. I still have them in the upper 80s, approaching 90. I don't think that's unrealistic. I really don't. And, you know, the caveat of good health, you're going to have injuries. So, okay, let's say Zimmerman does have some issues this year. Who steps up? Sanchez or Boyd? Or Pelfrey? I mean, we know what you have in Pelfrey. The bullpen has to be better. Simply has to be better. And the offense has underperformed in the regard of, you know, base running has held them back the last couple of years. When you're top three on base slugging and batting average, you should be a top three team in run scoring, and they've been 6th and 10th the last 2 years. So, I don't know. To me, there's a lot of pluses. I'm the eternal optimist, and if you can't be optimistic at this time of year, when can you be? But I do. I go through the exercise of, you know, when I said 90 to 92 last year, I go through the exercise. I think it's a good exercise. Try to figure out the individual war for each player. You're never going to do it, but at least it gives you the range of possibilities based on their careers to date. And then you can come to a pretty, if you actually nailed it, you would nail their win total. And that's what I did last year. That's how I came up with 90 to 92. This year, I'm probably a little more cautious, a little below 90. But to me, this team absolutely has the talent, given the things I talked about, to win 90.
And as a quick follow-up there, they would have cleared 90, 92, maybe even 94 last year, if not for some little glitches here and there. And had they not run into the buzzsaw that was the Cleveland Indians, do you think that was a fluke? Do you think they can beat Cleveland this year and take the division?
No reason they can't. And I say that because the previous 3 years, the Tigers were 37 and 19 against the Indians. And they had, for a lot of those years, a lot of starts from Carrasco and Salazar and Kluber and Bauer. They didn't knock those guys around, but they knew how to beat them. And they owned the Indians in their home ballpark. They were 21-9 at Progressive Field. So, yes, they can absolutely. Cleveland's good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Terry Francona, he's a difference maker. He's impressive. They do a lot of things right there. But, no, 4-14 to me is flukish. It isn't always. I mean, they crushed the Tigers. Make no bones about it. They just bombed most games. I say flukish because this is a team that, you know, that was, what, 20 games above the 500 mark against everybody else, 21 games above the 500 mark against everybody else, and a team that had had success against Cleveland the previous 3 years. Sometimes you just don't match up well against a team, and that was the case last year. And credit to Cleveland for that.
Now, Dan, you mentioned a lot of names just a moment ago, you know, Daniel Norris and Michael Fulmer, and a lot of guys that really give some reason for optimism heading into the season. But the big question all offseason has really been center field. How do you see that whole you know, kind of glut of players. You have Tyler Collins and Mikey Matuk and all those guys. How do you see that shaking out? And are you concerned about the level of production, especially defensively, that those guys might provide?
I think offensively you're not going to get a whole lot, but if Mikey Matuk is the electric player that his college coach at LSU said he was when he played for him, one of the most electric he's ever had, you know, college coaches don't say that just, you know, willy-nilly. That's one of the reasons the Tigers got him. He hasn't played a ton of center field, but that's what we're going to be watching in spring. Lloyd McClendon loved Jacoby Jones in center field. He's not played a lot of center field, second, third, then center field. He thought he was one of the best center fielders he's seen, watching him all year at Toledo. So that's kind of stuck with me. But I clearly, to me, picking up Mikey Matuk means he's probably your mostly everyday center fielder, even though the platoon would be the opposite. You'd think Collins might get more. But if Matuk is as good defensively and in limited games, he's a plus defender. If he's electric, if he can go get it in the gaps, and he's a real plus defender in center field, that to me is the most important position at Comerica Park. I mean, the outfield defense was just astoundingly bad last year. I'm still not quite sure why JD graded out so poorly. I was a little puzzled by that. But and not to pick on Cameron Maven, but, you know, he just didn't make a lot of plays. I love the guy. I wish he was in the lineup this year, but he didn't make a lot of plays in center field. I want that guy to go run to the gaps like Austin Jackson used to, take doubles and triples away. I think it changes the whole feel on the pitching staff. It changes the whole feel in the dugout. That guy's going to making those plays, you know, every few games, once a week. You're taking a double or triple away. That fires everybody up, I'm telling you. And that's why I'm really interested to see, because center field at Lakeland, you guys probably know, is pretty breezy down there in March.
Yeah,
it's a good challenge, and I think we'll get a pretty good feel for how Mikey Matuk is in center field. I think we know about Collins. You know, that's why I lost a little bit of weight. You know, he is pretty athletic, but I think he's, you know, solid in center field. But I'm interested to see how good Mikey Matuk is. But I picture him in center, Jones starting at AAA, getting the bat down. Lloyd thinks he can hit, but it's probably not now. And then Jacoby Jones may end up starting, I think, quite a few games in center field this year if he's as good as we hear.
Now, you mentioned Michael Fulmer a little bit earlier in this conversation. I know you talked with him on Monday, I think, in Tiger Talk with Pat Caputo.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Michael Fulmer and his, you know, amazing season last year that just kind of out of nowhere wins the Rookie of the Year. Do you think he can repeat that in 2017?
There's a lot to like about it. I believe that. And, you know, he admits he got a little tired down the stretch. You might have heard the conversation. He said he probably would have been in worse shape if he hadn't gotten the good advice from Justin Verlander, just basically a shoulder program that helped him stay relatively fresh. But, you know, if you look at his September starts, there were a couple of duds. But he made, I think, 3 good starts out of 5 in September, so it's not like he was completely out of gas. And he said he still felt like, you know, he could get up there mid-90s, and he did, but it's just the command probably wasn't what he wanted. The sharpness wasn't quite there. There's a lot to like. I would think there's every reason to believe that Michael Fulmer can do a lot of the same things he did. I think everybody's expecting a regression, but low walks, good strikeout rate, good swings and misses, developing changeup that, heck, he's only thrown for a year. I mean, there's a chance that's going to get better and better. This kid's got a chance to be special. So, okay, maybe he regresses a little bit, but what does that mean? That he has a 330 ERA? I always look at walks and strikeouts, low walks, high strikeouts. Hard contact, he limits the hard contact with that changeup. There's a lot to like. It's a skill set that I think should play very well.
Now, going kind of the other way here, Jordan Zimmermann was really limited for a good chunk of the season, didn't really pitch much in the second half last year. Some may say he kind of came back a little bit quick from his neck injury a little bit, but how do you see that shaking out in 2017? Do you think he's going to come back, pitch like the guy he used to be when he was pitching in Washington? Will he be a little bit limited? What are your thoughts on Zimmermann?
I think we're going to find out a lot in spring training. And, you know, we saw a specialist who kind of figured out the problem after the season ended. He got some shots right after the season, and then he didn't get the last shot because he was feeling so good. I don't know, I was struck by a quote that he said, still have good days and bad days, but the bad days aren't nearly as bad as they had been. which worries me a little bit. I wanted to sit here and say, I feel great. No lingering issues whatsoever, but Jordan's an honest guy. And so I really have to see it. It worries me. It does worry me. Because we never saw that. I mean, he had a steady 93-mile-an-hour fastball in 2015, and it was more 91, 92. And he says he can pitch there. I'm sure he can with his know-how, but it doesn't hurt to have that extra velocity. And if you had a neck issue, that certainly could hold that velocity down a little bit. So I'm really interested to see. I think, he holds the key. I said about Sanchez last year, I was wrong. A little more accurate this year. But I feel good about that because the track record's so good. The health did not involve his elbow, his shoulder, or anything along those lines. Assuming the Tigers are the best trainers and strength and conditioning guys. You know, assuming that they've got it under control and they figured out what it was after the season, and I know they do, and then they'll make sure that he's on a program that's going to keep it healthy. So I do worry a little bit from his quotes, but I think we'll find out a lot in spring. If he's healthy, don't worry about the results. Just if he's healthy, game in, game out, and, you know, building up his innings, that's to me what to watch for.
Well, I wouldn't feel too bad about Aníbal Sánchez if I were you, because I recall at this time last year, I had to check the tape, but I'm pretty sure I picked him as the comeback player for 2016, and I couldn't have been more wrong about that. So as we wrap this up then, who would you say is the one role player that absolutely has to perform well or even exceed expectations in order for the team to make the playoffs?
Role player, or maybe a guy who is coming off a bit of an off year. I mean, I look at James McCann. McCann made such big improvements behind the plate. He did. And I think Brad feels like he's getting better and better calling a game. He feels like that's a 4 or 5 year process. But he's progressing. And his receiving skills, he worked so hard at it. And he has to learn how to hit right-handers. I think that, you know, all of a sudden that changes the look at the bottom of the lineup. Because I think we know what we have in Jose Iglesias. Guy's not going to make hard contact and doesn't draw a lot of walks, and he's just going to put the bat on the ball and run. But I think James McCann has that potential to change the bottom part of the order. If you're just talking about, you know, bench guys, I'll be interested to see what that battle will be. Romine's, I think, shown his value, and people have to realize you don't look at wins above replacement for bench guys. You look at what's their versatility. Does the manager trust him in a key spot late in the game at a key position? Yes. Romine can play the outfield, anywhere on the infield. There's great value in Andrew Romine. Collins, I think, will be solid. They were, I thought, surprisingly optimistic about Collins, and I say that because he really tailed off after a good start after his recall from the minor leagues. I think it was in June. He really tailed off toward the end. But Alavila really is very high on him. So keep an eye on him, whether he gets more at-bats as the left-handed part of that platoon in center, assuming there's going to be that platoon. And then, you know, the big question is Dixon Machado. I don't think the Tigers want to lose that guy. And what I've seen, it's a very fluid shortstop with a good arm, nice range. He's a plus. And I still don't think that we'll trade Iglesias, but I'm very comfortable with the idea of Machado at short, maybe splitting time with Romine, if you thought the best thing for the Tigers for the future was to trade Iglesias and get a piece that you need. So those to me are kind of just some of the key players that we haven't talked about who could make an impact. But Machado's good defensively. He's very impressive. And right now he's out of options, and they could lose him at the end of spring training. They won't lose him for nothing. They'll probably work out a deal. But he could end up being that fourth guy on the bench. You'd have Collins, Machado, Romine, and then Alex Avila.
All right, well, Dan, I know you're struggling through a little bit of a cold here, so I don't want to keep you beyond you know, what's necessary. You've got to be in Lakeland in like 2 weeks calling a baseball game. Are you going to make it? Like, you going to kick this thing before then?
Oh, man, I got a game calling the U of D game on Friday against Oakland. That'll be a lot of fun, basketball game. Dig Vitale's coming in for that, so I have to get better for that. I've got a pretty good shot at it. I never get sick, knock on wood, but first time I've been sick in a long time, and it's just been just kind of wiped me out in a low-grade fever for a few days.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that for people that do what you do, you know, calling sports games. You don't really get a chance to get sick. I mean, what do you do? You can't, you know, say, well, I'm not coming in.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's really not an option.
And I don't think your partner, Jim Price, enjoys calling the games by himself either, so.
No, I think you'd rather have me there, I think.
Yes. Well, again, Dan, thank you so much for stopping by and talking to us. Always a pleasure to hear your voice and to talk Tigers baseball with you.
Hey, good talking to you guys, always.
All right, we'll catch you next time.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. And that is going to do it for another episode of The Voice of the Turtle. Rob, any final comments before we get out of here?
No, I'm just ready for baseball to start. Okay. This has been like the worst January, February I think I've had. I'm just like itchy and antsy. I want baseball to begin like now.
Well, we're almost there. Almost. So, and I'm with you. It's been a very odd December, January, February of just badness. So
I'm talking to Dan Dickerson also kind of expedites that too, because you hear it and you're like, oh, baseball. Wait, no, I'm just talking to him on the phone, which is amazing, but at the same time, not quite the same.
Well, if he wasn't sick, I would have had him like do a call for us or something, you know, give us a home run call or a strike three, got him on strikes kind of thing. But
dance, monkey, dance.
All right. Remember, we are only one half of the conversation. You're the other half. So leave us your comments at westofwoodward.com or find us on Twitter. I'm at hookslide23. Rob is at BYBRob. And the show is at VOTT Podcast. And as always, please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes. So on behalf of Rob Rojacki and all of those making their pilgrimages to Lakeland, this is Hookslide saying have a great week. Keep counting down the days to opening day. And we will see you the next time on The Voice of the Turtle.